Steve and Jill here.
Hello.
Welcome to the Land Academy Show, entertaining land investment talk. I'm Stephen Jack Butella.
And I'm Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny Southern California.
Today, Jill and I talk about negotiation and how it starts with a common ground. I found myself last week talking to a vendor for a pretty expensive machine for offers to owners, and we had what I think is a pretty diametrical disagreement. It doesn't matter. You always disagree with vendors and stuff, and the whole goal for everybody is to try to get it back to center so they get what they want, we get what we want. And, you know, so where does that start when everybody's going like this and arguing?
I can't wait to hear the whole story.
It starts with some type of common ground. And I got the idea from a politician a lot of years ago who was talking about, you know, how to be, you know, good politicians bring everybody together. They don't make people mad or alienate people. They try to, and I read and watched this thing about reaching a common ground first and then moving forward from there. For instance, we all have kids and we don't want them to die via nuclear holocaust. So, yeah, you hate me? Yeah, I'm not a real big fan of yours, but maybe we can make some legislation here where the kids don't die.
That's great, babe. That was my first example too. I was just gonna toss that one out. Darn.
Like I can.
Funny how we think alike.
Like I honestly did. I was looking forward. I am looking forward to do this show with Jill because I hear her doing this all the time, and I like to blindside Jill on this show.
Yes, you do.
And I hear her say this stuff to these sellers every time I walk by her offers, sellers or buyers, and she's saying this stuff. And what she's doing is bringing them back to a center. Like, hey, look, you want to sell it? I want to buy it. So
what's going to make you happy?
And yeah, I guess really the thing is just kind of price, right? If all this is the kind of stuff she says, if the only issue that you and I have is price, everything else we have all this worked out, we can figure this out.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff she says. How can you say no to that?
Thanks.
Before we get into it, let's take a question posted by one of our members on the landinvestors.com online community. It's free.
Ivan asks, hi, has anyone dealt with a rollback tax, and are these enforced? Are they addressed at closing, or will I get a large tax bill in the future? And then, quote, it says, if your land qualified for agriculture appraisal and you change its use to a non-agricultural use, you will owe a rollback tax for each of the previous 5 years in which your land received the lower appraisal. The rollback tax is the difference between the taxes you paid on your land's agricultural value and the taxes you would pay if the land had been taxed on its higher market value, plus 7% interest is charged for each year from the date that taxes would have been due. So this is clearly,
end quote,
right, end quote, notice that he got.
Yeah.
And then here he goes on to say,
here's the story of this question.
Right. Where did this come from? Well, Ivan says, I bought 50 acres that are ag exempt, but plan on selling smaller lots that are already platted, some less than the required ag exemption size limit, but now worried about this potential tax. Had a real estate agent bring this up, which has killed some of his deals in the past. I don't believe it at first, but the above text is directly from the county. Thanks, Ivan.
So let me kind of put this in layman's terms. He's saying rollback tax, and I'm sure that's some legitimate term from somewhere. What it means is taxes in arrears. There's huge tax breaks for farms, for agricultural property, because everybody benefits when people grow crops. We need to eat. It's the same way, by the way, with nonprofit-owned real estate. So when you look at these hospitals or universities, they don't pay any taxes. If you're a legitimate 501c3 and you own a hospital, a nonprofit hospital or a teaching institution, you don't pay any property taxes at all. It's millions and millions of dollars a month. Harvard, the university, doesn't pay any taxes. It's technically a nonprofit exempt. And if that campus isn't, I mean, if that were a for-profit university,
I think millions. They do okay anyway. Last time I checked, it's not like I can't afford to put food on the table. I'm a professor at Harvard. You never hear that saying.
Those guys, tenured professors, make like $3 and $4 million a year.
See, so that, I'm sorry, I'm not going to go there right now because it's not the discussion, but I have a little beef about the for-profit, non-profit thing like that.
Anyway. Boy, that's something you and I would agree on.
You know, let's just call a spade.
Why? Go ahead.
Like,
I want to vent here too.
I'm sorry. Newman's dressing. Is he not getting anything out of this? I gotta wonder.
Here's my big complaint. You're staring at two pieces of real estate. You're looking at you're standing at the street, looking at two pieces of real estate, and they look exactly the same. One of them gets taxed fully. Gets taxed at, let's say, in California, this isn't uncommon, $50,000 a month. And the other one is $300 a year. Now, let's forget about why. This is real. Forget about why. Is that okay? On what planet?
Right.
Is that okay? I don't see it. We have all these crazy real estate tax laws in California. And this take the same thing I just said. Here's a hospital that pays no taxes because it's nonprofit.
Right.
Here's a for-profit hospital across town that pays $24 million a month in property taxes. How is that a level playing field for competition? It's not. So property taxes, I believe that income taxes are relatively level, or at least our legislators think that. I think the property taxes are left over from 1750 and totally cockeyed.
I don't disagree at all.
Anyway, back to Ivan's thing.
Yes.
Rollback or taxes in arrears are because a property changed statuses. So he's going from agriculturally assessed property or nonprofit assessed property, and it's transferring ownership to a different use.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing, let's say you buy a nonprofit hospital, a for-profit hospital buys that nonprofit hospital. In the statutes, and he was nice enough to quote it for us, there's rules. And so they say, for whatever reason, this made sense to some legislator in the past, we're gonna go back 5 years and charge you.
And 7% interest.
Right. So his question is, has anybody ever heard of this? Obviously we have.
Yeah.
Because we're real angry about it, Joe and I.
Exactly.
And it's something you really got to look into when you start moving uses around. Here's the dangling carrot. Here's the kicker. We always sit and talk about agricultural property is the greatest thing you can buy ever, because you always have to, you can zone down from there to do anything. Make subdivisions is what Ivan's doing. Put a trailer on it, which is a great situation for the business that we're in. You just have to be super careful with the next assessor, how they look at that.
Mm-hmm. I have two things to say. You asked, one of his questions is, are they enforced? I think at some point they will be, so be ready for it. They'll catch up with you. Trust me, they'll catch up with you, especially if you're in California. So the second thing is, what's funny is, if you go through a title agent and they catch it, they will try to throw it in there. A good title agent will. A lot of title agents won't catch it, and you'll find out later. Down the road, it'll catch up with you.
Vast majority won't. That's my opinion, but you're closer to it.
Yeah, I had one just recently where there was a lien. There was flat out a water lien and some other lien on a property, and we bought it through title and we closed through title. When I bought it through title, they didn't catch it. And when I closed through title, they caught it. I'm on the sell side. I'm like, where did this come from? Which really made me mad, because it should have been a lien on the prior owner. It should have been dealt with that when I bought it, but it didn't. So guess who got the $4,000 bill? I did.
What'd you do?
There's nothing I could do.
Oh, I fought it.
I did. I fought it. Well, I made enough that was fine anyway. I didn't change the deal at all because we're good people. I didn't say, oh, oops, you owe me an extra $4,000, you know, or something like that. No, we had enough to cover it, so it's no big deal. But I mean, it is a big deal. But I was mad because I went back to the prior agent, tried to fight it, and they're of course fighting back. You know,
we could actually. That's a pretty eagle. You know, that's an insurance. That's an insurance claim. It's not even a lawsuit.
I know.
How long ago was it?
Just recently, in the last 90 days. So, and I just got the. It's funny you bring this up, because just this week, I got the answer back from their counsel saying, "Oh, because of Section I-98, we're not liable."
Want me to get involved in this?
If you want to, it's a couple $1,000. It's about $4,000. I think it's worth pushing.
It's an
a little
insurance
bit.
Claim.
Yeah, that's what
that's
I think.
That's all it should be. It's a. You know what?
I want to open a formal thing. Would you?
If not for any other reason, it's a good topic for the show.
Yeah. I told them I'd like to open a formal thing, and they went back saying we're not liable, but if you really want to push it, you can. I'm like, I think we will then.
You know what the problem is?
What?
And this is more you and I talking. We're having a meeting right now.
Excuse
Joe
us.
And I. The issue is that, theoretically, the law firm, the legal fees probably exceed what we're actually going to. I'm sure you have a case. I'm sure of it. But
we'll
the legal
see.
Fees. You know what? Really, what I want to avoid is them intimidating you because you're a woman.
Thanks.
So if that's going on, I'll spend $25,000 to get $4,000.
It's not that at all.
Like the protection for me, comes out.
It's the right thing to do. They screwed up. It's the first time I've ever had a title agent make a mistake. Ha ha! Just kidding.
I'm like, what the heck is she saying? This today. Can you imagine? It's the first mistake today.
First mistake today. That'd be hilarious. Okay. Anyway.
Boy, it's a good thing the topic today is light.
We're just going off. This is our Monday vent, apparently.
Today's topic, negotiation starts with a common ground. This is the meat of the show. So as I said earlier, all good negotiation starts. Well, you know, we send all these letters out and people call us back. And Jill's famous for saying, I mean, some of them are really angry. They're like, how did you come up with this price? Some of them just sign it and we do the deal. Jill's famous for saying, if they call back, no matter how angry they are, they actually have an interest in selling. They just don't know it yet. So that's what this topic is really all about. I think, and I'm not saying that this show is not how to convert angry callers on the mailer into sellers. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, in any negotiation, I don't care who you're talking to, whether it's a vendor or an employee or your children, I think it's very smart to start with some type of common ground. I would think you have a lot to say about this as a sales between the two of us. You're the salesperson, so.
Well, let me back up. I do think that when they call, the majority of them, they're calling back because they are interested. Not all of them are. Let's call a spade a spade. There are a few people that probably ream every pizza company that leaves a flyer on their door for wasting paper. You know, they're not calling them back in because I'm really do. And by the way, can I get 2 pizzas for $10.99 based on the flyer that I'm really mad about? They're not going to do that. but there's a lot of them, I think that's the reason why. So that's the first, but you're right. So that's the first common ground is, all right, they're calling me back. Do they even want to sell? Because if they do want to sell, that's we're on common ground. I want to buy, you want to sell. So now we just got to figure out what is the price. So I made some notes and I was thinking about negotiation. And first of all, I don't like it either. I really don't. The only time I like negotiating is when I'm in Mexico and it's kind of fun and we're just goofing off. I kind of want the silver bracelet. I don't really want the silver bracelet. So I'll throw out some numbers. He throws out some numbers. We all laugh. And then I might get a silver bracelet out of it. I might not. I might walk away because I didn't want it that bad. So that's the kind of negotiation that I like. You know, I'm good with all that. So the other kind, I don't really want to do it because I really know that there's a number that I'm happy with and they're happy with, period. We just got to figure that out. And I, as the buyer, and Mr. Jones as a seller, is trying to, you know, I'm trying to get the best purchase price I can, and he's trying to sell at the highest price he can. Who wouldn't? We all would. That's just life. So I try to figure out, what is that number? I'm not here to go back and forth and back and forth all day. That's ridiculous. So I like to think I've gotten better at it. I know I have. I've really got to the point where I really have this conversation with them and just, you know, and I'm not trying to negotiate, but I say, here is the deal. This is who I am. This is how I roll. This is how the transaction will go. Please keep in mind, there are no agents involved, no commissions, this, and this. I'll pay for this. So you know, I'm not negotiating. I'm putting it all out there. All I'm trying to find out from you is this. What is the, keeping all that in mind, what is the bottom number that you would accept for this property? And I tell them too, please don't answer me right now. Unless you know what it, you are done and have it in your head and you'll die unless you get that number, because there are people that will do that. So, And then they don't really want to sell. That's what you just uncovered. So I try to find out what it is, and then I let them come back to me. They may call me back, they may email me back, whatever it is, and then I'll tell them. I just did this like with LA County, big couple million-dollar deals. I said, just let me know. I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to waste my time. Please come back to me with a number. I will give you a yes or a no, and we will just go our separate ways. We're either going to do the deal or not. That's kind of it. And then as the buyer, you know, sometimes, not often, I'm trying to think of an example. but say they came back with a number and it was 1.2 million and I knew I wouldn't go above 950. I would not budget 950. Depending on the situation, when they come back with their 1.2, I'm walking. I know I'm walking. I'm not going to meet them there. But they might say, what would you pay? Because their 1.2 is not in stone. And I'll go, you know what? I'll be honest with you. My highest and best would have been 950. And that's it. And then I walk away. And then and even then, sometimes I might come back. So would you call that negotiating?
I would absolutely call that negotiating. Okay. But this topic, I mean, we veered off to negotiation here.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's totally fine. You know, I'll get back to common ground in a second. I'll tell you what stops negotiation for me in a really good way. I look at mailers as projects. Like, so, all right, this is the South Carolina project, or this is the Mojave County, Arizona project, or whatever. Or we're trying to buy tons of 40s in Iron County, Wyoming, or Montana. So I look at them like projects. And so in all these projects, every single one of them for me, before I even sit down to do a mailer or pick a county, starts with, all right, how much money can I sell these properties for? I know if I send a mailer out for 40-acre properties in XYZ County, Carbon County, Wyoming, let's say, I'm just pulling a county out. We had a very successful 40-acre campaign there a long time ago. I know I can sell these properties for about 20 grand, and I can sell them like within hours. So am I going to sit around and negotiate? I send an offer campaign out for 8, and somebody comes back at 10 and says, I've got 10 properties to sell you. This happened. 10 properties to sell you at 10 grand each. Do I sit around and say, well, I sent you an offer for 8. What's the problem with 8? And do I get into it with them? No. I know I'm going to double my money and I'm going to do it quickly. So that's what you do. I have seen more people. We've gone through more transaction coordinators for this exact reason than any other reason. Because for some reason in their soul, they believe that they're going to be a hero if they pick up that extra $2,000 a deal. I could care less. I just want to get a deal done. I would rather do 10 properties at 10,000 bucks each. That's 100 grand payday in like 2 weeks. So this became about negotiation and about for whatever reason. My point is, when somebody about common ground, and I'll wrap it up on this, there has to be, for my common ground, and it's worked for me throughout my whole career in commercial real estate and with land and specifically with houses. You want to, Mrs. Jones, you want to sell your house, clearly, and I want to buy your house. The thing for me that really matters is price. And what I'm hearing you say, the thing for you really matters is that you don't want to have to clean out the basement or do any of this stuff. You want to go visit your granddaughter said you can come and live with her in Arizona. So how can we make this work together? Because I want you to feel good about the price that we're purchasing it for. But at the same time, and I'm going to do all this other stuff for you. I'm going to clean the basement out. You can just walk away if you want. So, and I want you to know we're not paying you top dollar for the house, but it doesn't seem to matter to you anyway. This stuff really happens all the time. So we've reached a common ground, you know, and I've seen probably 50% of the deals that I've seen that fall apart are for some peeing contest between two people over like, it could be in healthcare a lot of years ago. I had a deal collapse because it was a for-profit group buying it from a nonprofit group, and the nonprofit group had a longtime resident in a long-term care facility who had some stuff in, who had some type of religious things that they wanted to keep there, and there was just this huge debate about, and it killed the deal. And so, like, where's the common ground in that?
Exactly.
It's silly negotiation silliness, and the modern version of that is people trying, for whatever reason, hanging their hat on, I soaked every single penny out of that seller that there was left. In fact, they're walking away with no shirt. And I don't know where that comes from, do you? No. I don't think you're going to be around in business very long if you do those kinds of things. I don't think I just always use the car dealership.
Yeah.
As like, I don't think that when a person buys a car, and they sign all the stuff and they drive away, and the salesperson runs in the back of the shop and high fives everybody and says, God, man, I absolutely took that guy. I just nailed him.
So your common ground is figuring out they want to sell, what are all the terms and things around that, and prices last?
Well, price is very important for us, but getting the rock bottom dollar price is less important than getting a deal done where you're doing okay.
Agreed.
And so I think to get to that point, you have to find out what the common ground is. So they obviously want to sell. If price is their absolute, if you until you, you know, you're a perfect person to do this episode with, and I know we're over on time. If you get a call back from a guy who's in the real estate business, he's got 22 properties, he received your letter or letters, and he says, I got your letter for $10,000 a property. My rock bottom number, and I'm in this business just like you are, is 12.5 because I bought them for 7 18 years ago. If you can accept that, and you know they're worth 20, and you can accept that, we can get a deal done very quickly. Then I think that everybody met a common mm-hmm. ground, and that's how price is gonna work. But what I see more often than that is somebody's in the business, usually an older person, way older than us, and says, is that all you got, 10 grand?
Right.
That's not gonna work for me. Well, Mr. Jones, what's gonna work? I don't know. What else can you pay? And so that's not a common ground. That's a little negotiation game where everybody's maybe bored with whatever they're doing that day. And they're really interested in getting a deal done. And it actually makes me a little angry thinking about it right now.
I understand.
Does it make you angry?
It does. Thank you.
It's a waste of time.
Happy you could join us today. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you can find us right here on the Land Academy Show. Tuesdays and Thursdays, we are over next door on the House Academy Show.
Tomorrow, the episode on the House Academy Show is called Affordable Housing. Solutions for Affordable Housing? Just ask us. You are not alone in your real estate ambition.
Well, this was a perfect example of we don't talk about these topics before we sit down, clearly, because we both have different directions on the same topic. They did not really relate at all.
I think it's...
But you got hopefully you got a lot out of that.
You know what this should have been called is real world examples of why...
Stephen hates negotiating.
Self-serving negotiation doesn't work.
There you go.
That's what this should be called.
Okay.
Self-serving negotiation.
There we go. That would have been a little different. That would be okay. The Land Academy Show remains commercial-free for you, our loyal listener. So wherever you're watching, wherever you're listening, please subscribe and rate us there.
We are Steve and Jill. Information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property.